And a good Monday morning, everybody. Welcome into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming all around the world on the Game Nashville app as well. How's it going? Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson is back at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. And I believe Ryan is there as well today on a Monday. Ryan, what's up?
Yes, sir. How we doing, Chase? How was your weekend in the cabin?
Hey, my weekend was good. Some rest, some relaxation, some bad golf. Even though I will say, and this was the general consensus from everybody, we all know that my golf game is absolute trash, but it actually has improved.
Well, there was nowhere to go but up, so I'm not necessarily basically surprised to hear that.
I can hit it off the tee now. Now, it doesn't always go where I want it to, but it's getting distance.
Okay.
So that's a step in the right direction.
How many golf balls did you lose?
A lot. I would say 10,
well,
at least.
That's not a ton. I've had worse before.
Yeah, I mean, and some of it was I probably could have gone and gotten it, but I just didn't want to because I didn't want to go through the tall grass. But, there was some of that.
How many tee shots did you get past the ladies' tees?
Oh, well, actually, a majority of them.
Okay,
that's where there was improvement. There was improvement on my tee shot. There was improvement in the fairway. I was actually being it. You know, I was connecting with the ball, so that was good. Putting needs some work. Putting actually was never awful. Like I can get it near the cup, and then just bang it in. But overall, we're getting better.
Okay, all right. So it sounds like you shot a nice 74. On Thursday,
something like
on
that.
The front nine.
Yeah, on the front nine. Yeah, there you go. That's about it. But it was good. Good to get away, and good to be back. Good to be back with you guys. I hate that we have to start the show off the way we're going to start the show off because I was hoping let's just come back and be positive, but I guess we can't do that. So let's start with my favorite sport and NASCAR. And for those of you that don't know, the Talladega race was actually rained out. They will run that today. So they could not run that yesterday. And it came out late last night that somebody discovered a noose hanging in the 43 garage stall. And for those of you that are still new and learning, Bubba Wallace is the driver of the 43 car and is African-American. And so that is very sad to hear that news. NASCAR released a statement last night. Late this afternoon, NASCAR was made aware that a noose was found in the garage stall of the 43 team. We are angry and outraged and cannot state strongly enough how seriously we take this heinous act. We have launched an immediate investigation and will do everything we can to identify this person responsible and eliminate them from the sport. As we have stated unequivocally, there is no place for racism in NASCAR, and this act only strengthens our resolve to make the sport open and welcoming to all. That statement coming from NASCAR itself. So we've discussed this. I've given a lot of thought to what I want to say, but Marty Smith, who has covered the sport for a very long time, he sat down with our table at SEC Media Days. He's come on these shows quite a bit. Marty is one of my favorite people, co-host of Marty and McGee, as you all may know. He went on SVP Sports Center last night, and I couldn't think of a better way to start this topic off with Marty Smith.
Well, first of all, I feel like a fool because I just told you, not an hour ago, uh-huh. 90 minutes ago, that the sport had come so far, and then we see this. And I will tell you that I spoke to a senior NASCAR official just a few moments ago, and they reiterated that statement. They're going to find who this person is. They're going to eliminate this person from the sport forever because this sport is moving forward. This sport is in a progressive mode. This sport is in a moment where this crap, this despicable crap, is not only not acceptable, but there's just no place for it. And whomever that is, I hope that you are so ashamed of yourself. I hope that you realize that that is someone's dignity and that is someone's positioning in this sport who has earned his place by talent and by hard work, and he stood up for something that he believed, and he asked for help from other people who believe similarly. And that the measures were taken to start taking those steps. And then we come down here to a place that I love. I love Talladega, Alabama. It's my favorite place on the NASCAR tour. It's my favorite race. I love the staff here. And then some, I'm about to say words I'm not allowed to say. Something like this happens in the garage area in Richard, in the garage area of Richard Petty's race car for a young man in Bubba Wallace who has galvanized so many people because he was willing to stand up for something that is so long overdue. And NASCAR's current management level, executive level, agrees that it was time to take this stand. And then somebody goes and does this. You're not just hurting one or two people, whomever you are. You're hurting a whole lot of people who have made the decision that it's damn sure time to go be better. And it pisses me the hell off. And it pisses everybody else in the sport off who care. Who care not only for Bubba, but for every single person that he is standing up for.
Marty Smith, ESPN. And I've listened to that, Ryan, probably 5-6 times already this morning because he's right. And I got that, you know, I get the emails from NASCAR, and I got that last night as I was going to bed because I was like, I'm going to go to bed early. I'm going to get an early start to a new week, you know, and I read that and then I couldn't go to sleep because I'm sitting there going, why in the hell in 2020 is this still a thing? And I know it's a thing, and I know it has taken over our country, and there is change happening, but it's like, why? Why is this still a thing? Because let me tell you something. I've talked to Bubba Wallace 3 or 4 times on the phone. I've met him probably twice now. He's a cool dude. He's a really cool dude. He likes to, you know, and I think part of the reason that fans have gravitated towards him has nothing to do with the color of his skin, but the fact that he's just laid back and a cool guy. During a rain delay, he'll get on the front stretch and throw a football with the fans. He throws it up in the grandstands. They throw it back. And everybody loves that. Everybody loves that part about him. But then he gets real, as he should have. And sadly, it was his burden to bear. But he took it, and he ran with it, and he's done a tremendous job. And now somebody, unfortunately, probably on the inside, because the way the access to the garage is right now, does this crap. And you take all the momentum that NASCAR has had and you just slam on the brakes because of that. Now, will they recover from it? Will it make everybody stronger? I hope so. But why are we having to compare a driver named Darrell Bubba Wallace to Jackie Robinson in 2020? Why are we having to do that? It's got me emotional. I know Marquise and I have talked about it this morning. I want to hear your thoughts on it, but I'm with Marty. It pisses me off that there's somebody that thought that was a good idea and would do that. And then haven't even addressed the guy that flew the plane over the speedway yesterday with a Confederate flag that said defund NASCAR. Move forward, not backwards. I kept that clean, and I'm proud of myself.
I'm proud of you too, Chase. This was probably one of the most heinous acts I've ever heard of in sports. And I know NASCAR came out and said that they are going to find the person or persons who committed this act and eliminate them from the sport. I hope they are eliminated from sports altogether, and that this person, and like you said, with the limited access right now, this is likely a crew member or someone within NASCAR who did this. And hopefully that person never works in sports again. And really, when you have this on your resume, it's going to be hard to get any sort of job when you do something to this degree in 2020, especially with everything going on in this world here in the last month. You know, I hope for Bubba Wallace's sake, he's saying all the right things. He is I am very impressed with how Bubba Wallace has carried himself here in the last few weeks. Not only with the Confederate flag, but now this.
Yeah. He did release a statement that I'll read in just a second. He did tweet that out.
And I hope this doesn't affect him mentally when it comes to feeling welcomed around the track. I really hope that what he's saying on social media is 100% true, that this isn't going to faze him one bit, and that he can continue to help this sport move forward. But yesterday it took major steps backward.
Yeah, and I love the support he's gotten from his fellow drivers. Clint Boyer tweeted out a picture of them riding motorcycles, and he said, when you blank with family, you blank with all of us. And that's I think, the general consensus with Bubba. And for those of you that watch the iRacing events with NASCAR, Boyer and Bubba, they had a lot of fun. There was a lot of trash talk and a lot of back and forth, but those two are tight. Bubba Wallace did put out on Twitter, "Today's despicable act of racism and hatred leaves me incredibly saddened and serves as a painful reminder of how much further we have to go as a society and how persistent we must be in the fight against racism. Over the last several weeks, I have been overwhelmed by the support from people across the NASCAR industry, including other drivers and team members in the garage. Together, our sport has made a commitment to driving real change and championing a community that is accepting and welcoming of everyone. Nothing is more important, and we will not be deterred by the reprehensible actions of those who seek to spread hate. As my mother told me today, quote, they are just trying to scare you, end quote. This will not break me. I will not give in, nor will I back down. I will continue to proudly stand for what I believe in." Bubba Wallace. Absolutely true. And Marquise, you and I were texting this morning. You know, I want to take you to a race, not because it doesn't have anything to do with that you're black, just because you're my friend and that's my sport and I love this sport. And I want to take my friends to the sport that I love when it comes to Nashville. But if you told me that you didn't want to go, it would sadden me, but I would understand. And that's what I want to change.
Yeah, it's funny because I've been to every single sport. I've been to hockey, obviously. I've been to NFL games, NBA games, college basketball games, college football games. I've been to tennis matches. I've been to UFC, and I've both been to wrestling, and I've never been to a NASCAR event, and hence a reason why I've never been to an event. I just never felt comfortable ever going to a NASCAR event. And even with this, and NASCAR is making a bunch of changes, and respectably so, they're trying to change their image, and I understand that, and you know, kudos to them for doing that. But you're going to still have that other half. The other half of people who you know, don't feel like I belong in their NASCAR realm or their room, their races or anything. And it's sad that this happened not only in my state of Alabama and Talladega, which a place that I've always wanted to go to if I were to go to a NASCAR event. It happened to a guy who's from Alabama, I might add, in Mobile, in Bubba Wallace. And it's just, this sport makes me uncomfortable to go. Because if they're going to do this to one of their racers, imagine what they'll do to me. I'm just a normal person watching a match or a race. Imagine what they do to me. So if they do this to one of their own. So it's just, I never felt comfortable watching a NASCAR race and going to one. And with all this going on, I still don't. And they kind of make it, and I'm not going to say all of them, because like I said, it's half and half. Like, there's a lot of people that really want change in NASCAR, but you have that other half that kind of overshadows them. But it's just, I don't feel comfortable going to a race. And I'll just stay in basketball. I'll stay going to basketball and football games because guess what? I'm comfortable. Maybe I got to deal with a drunk Titans fan every now and then. But guess what? I don't have to deal with this kind of stuff. And I'm perfectly fine with that.
Well, it is my hope, Marquise, as a lifelong and diehard NASCAR fan that one day that changes. And this is it's not the beginning, but this is probably one of the most important times of changing that. You know, Dale Earnhardt Jr. just tweeted out, "I don't worry about our sport. I have confidence NASCAR's leadership will find who did this and continue pushing us in the right direction. I do worry about Bubba. I hope Bubba is feeling loved and supported. Keep sending him that love and support. He needs it now more than ever." And I think that is very true. Change. And by the way, I watch on Twitter. If you hit unfollow because of these types of conversations, look in the mirror and make a change. That's all I'm saying. We'll shift gears. No pun intended. That was bad on me. We'll do that when we come back. The Rundown, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. You can stream 102.5 The Game from anywhere. All you have to do is download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill or Google Home, and ask to play 102.5 The Game. Or you can just log on to thegamenashville.com and listen to us there. Welcome back into The Rundown. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson hanging out with you. That race at Talladega coming up today at 2 o'clock, by the way. So I'm filling in for Jared this week. I'll be doing Jared and the GM. And probably going to have a TV on, and it might have to be behind me so I don't get distracted during the show. But, Ryan, our confidence level right now in sports returning, and when I say sports, I mean the NHL, the NBA, baseball is its own conversation, the NFL starting on time, college football starting on time. Because I'm going to be honest with you, my confidence level has waned a little bit lately because of all these reports of COVID-19 cases going up in our country. And you saw the report over the weekend that the Lightning had to shut down their practice facility because of positive tests. And the NHL still in phase two, hadn't even gotten to phase three, which will be training camp. So where are you on this right now?
Well, it was inevitable that this was going to happen whenever sports did start to come back in the phases that they are, specifically the National Hockey League. They're currently in phase two, which is small group training camp, not training camp, small groups working out voluntarily. This was inevitable, and it's all about how these players and these teams can control this and make sure that it doesn't spread throughout the locker rooms. And when you look at the Tampa Bay Lightning, they were the most notable team to have the outbreak. You know, it came on Friday, same day that Florida had over 3,800 new cases of the coronavirus in that state. There's been a huge outbreak in Florida, not only with the Tampa Bay Lightning, but the Philadelphia Phillies had to temporarily close their facility as well. So it's caused Major League Baseball to shut down all spring camps in Arizona and Florida after just an abundance of several positive tests. So it's I don't know at what point does, let's say, the NHL, for instance, at what point do they sit back and say, okay, there's been enough of these positive tests, we're going to have to push back phase three. And phase three is currently scheduled for July 10th, which is full training camp, and that has not changed. I think they're going to try their best to get through this and power through. But, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning had an outbreak. I know Austin Matthews with the Toronto Maple Leafs, it came out over the weekend that he also tested positive. So, you know, these cases are going to happen. So as long as they have the right protocols in place to power through this and not have to pause everything, then that would be good. But if this continues to catch wildfire and you have all these players that are in their training facilities testing positive, then they may have to push back that July 10th.
Yeah, and that's my concern. And because I knew this was going to happen. Like, you knew that there were going to be positive tests. And as cities reopen, Nashville enters phase three today. So as cities continue to reopen, you're going to see an uptick. So it's just how you handle it. But if it's too much at one time, what does that do to the timetable? And then at what point if you are, especially the NHL and the NBA, do you say, okay, this is pushing us back too much. We got to bag it. Like, it stinks. We don't want to, but we're not going to be able to come back. We're just going to have to wait to start the next season and hope for the best, go from there. That continues to be my question. At what point is there a date in Gary Bettman or Adam Silver's mind and their group of, okay, we're not going to be able to pull this off? So that's what I'm curious about. We do go back to the NBA desk with Marquise Munson because I know you said you had something to add to this.
Yeah, so these next couple of days are going to be huge for the NBA because tomorrow they're going to start testing their players. So tomorrow is going to be testing for the NBA players. I don't know if for sure if it's going to be all 30 teams that are going to be tested or just teams in the bubbles, but I do know that they're going to be starting testing tomorrow, according to Bobby Marks of ESPN. And also on Wednesday, players that decide not to play in this bubble, the 22, you know, part of the 22 teams, if they decide not to play, they should notify their team by Wednesday. So we can find out Tuesday and Wednesday about testing, and then we can find out Wednesday whether or not there's certain guys that just don't feel comfortable playing at all, and they'll probably notify their team on Wednesday that they're not going to play.
Yeah, I think that is a big day to watch because, you know, this is another thing too, Ryan, that we've talked about of, okay, what happens if a player, whether they're a superstar or not, says, yeah, I'm just not comfortable. I have a family member that, you know, is susceptible, or I'm susceptible. Say that three times fast. So what happens there? I mean, that's going to be the big question with a lot of people of, okay, then what do you do? So I think that's something to pay attention to this week as well. How do you think this affects the NFL and college football? Because we still hear of a second wave, that there could be another wave as it gets colder. Yet right now, you know, we're sitting here talking about upticks in the middle of June.
Well, so I mean, this has also been happening with college football teams and players. I mean, what was it? Alabama that had a smaller outbreak here in the last couple of weeks where there were, I don't want to misquote the number.
It was between 5 and 6.
Okay. I was going to say 5, but I didn't want to say that.
Yeah. It was in the mixture of 5 and 6. And then obviously Texas had, you know, way more than that, double that.
Right. So this has been going on with college football, and there are some people out there that say, all right, let's just get it out of the way, and then they would be fine once football season comes around. And I just don't see how you can truly let that happen, of let everybody get coronavirus and then, you know, they all recover from it and then you play sports. I don't think everyone would be that lucky. So, look, if the NBA and NHL have to shut down their return to play plan and not bring it back in late July, then I would have to think that's going to have a domino effect on football.
Yeah, the only...
Why wouldn't it?
Well, it would. It definitely would because of how things are structured. But then you're going to have the argument of, well, football's played outside mostly. I know you do have some indoor facilities. Does that really change anything? And that's me asking a question. Does that really change anything? And I would love somebody smarter than me to answer that because I don't know. But yeah, no, I think it pushes everything back. I do. Right now I am weary of college football, especially starting on time. The NFL, still up in the air on, but I think that they are monitoring all of this very closely. I mean, they're going to monitor what NASCAR is doing with bringing fans in. I mean, at the All-Star race, they want to have 30,000 at Bristol, which it seats 160, so you can spread people out. But still, that's a lot of people in one spot. So I think that it's still in a monitoring situation, but with all of this that we're discussing right now, I don't think you can sit here and just say, they'll be fine. Football will start on time. I just can't do that. I can't do that at all. So we will continue to see. But if football does start on time, the Dallas Cowboys look like they're going to have their quarterback in place because he's going to sign something. We will discuss that when we come back here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app as well. Chase McKay, Brian Porth, Marquise Munson here with you on a Monday morning. I'll be in for Jared Stillman this week on Jared and the GM. It'll be a Darren and Donick like usual during the middays, but looking forward to working with the GM, Floyd Reese. And I will be asking him this question today, Ryan, about what this does for Derrick Henry, or if anything. But Dak Prescott is signing his tender, I guess making the comparison between the two. Who signs a long-term deal first, Dak Prescott or Derrick Henry? But reports came out over the weekend that Dak Prescott would sign his franchise tender. Adam Schefter of ESPN has more.
To me, the significance is it locks Dak in for the 2020 season. We're not going to see Le'Veon Bell, and whether or not he will or won't be reporting to camp, okay, whenever everybody reports to camp, we're not going to be wondering if he's going to be there for the start of the regular season, if there is a regular season. He is locked in once he signs that exclusive franchise tender. And to me, the stakes on the poker game between the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott just got higher. Because once he does sign that, and that tag will be signed by Monday, then the Dallas Cowboys owe him the $31.4 million for this season. And if they can't get a long-term deal done by July 15th and they have to franchise him again, guess what that number is going to be? 37.7. And if they can't get a deal done after that, the next year, it's 144% of the salary from the previous year, $54.4 million. So to me, he's got long-term leverage because the Dallas Cowboys can't afford to lose Dak Prescott, and they can't have him count against their cap at the numbers he's currently slated to make each of the next couple of years.
Adam Schefter on Dak Prescott signing the franchise tender, which is the reason that he's signing it now is, in my opinion, one of the reasons that Derrick Henry went ahead and signed his when he did, because it could go both ways, and it's different, running backs, quarterbacks, I understand that, but I think it helps in the negotiation process. But Ryan, there are a couple of questions here. The first one being, who do you believe gets the long-term deal first, Dak Prescott or Derrick Henry here in Nashville?
Derrick Henry.
I completely agree. I think that's a pretty easy answer.
Yeah, I think it is going to be Derrick Henry, because we've heard how vocal John Robinson has been here this offseason of just what Derrick Henry means to the Tennessee Titans. And I firmly believe before July 15th that a deal will happen, a long-term deal between the Titans and Derrick Henry. If I had to guess, probably a 3 or 4 year contract between Henry and the Titans. And with Dak, you know, I could see the Cowboys trying to go through this season and seeing how Dak performs under the franchise tag. I could see Dallas testing Dak in that manner. Especially, I mean, we have to think of this too.
But isn't that risky? What if he lights it up and then you gotta pay him even more?
Sure, but you also have a new head coach there, and what if Mike McCarthy isn't a Dak Prescott fan? What if
that's true?
What if Mike McCarthy is in Jerry Jones's ear saying, you know what, Dak's not my guy, or I'm not sure yet whether or not he's my guy? Then you see what he has in a franchise tag season, a la Kirk Cousins, and you can't really afford, as you heard there from Adam Schefter, you can't really afford, if you're the Cowboys, to let that linger. And then franchise tag him again next offseason, then that's going to cost him $37 million instead of $31 million, which $37 million for Dak Prescott, no thank you. So I would have to think that Dak Prescott, if he plays this season under the franchise tag, he either signs long-term after the season with the Cowboys or he hits free agency.
So here's the other question. When you look at both of these individuals, and yes, one is a quarterback, one is a running back, but which is the bigger risk for their team on a long-term deal? Is it Dak for the Cowboys or is it Derrick Henry here? What do you say to that?
I would probably say the bigger risk, because of the position he plays, would probably be Derrick Henry.
Seems logical. I think a lot of people would say that. I lean that way, but I'll also say this. And this is coming from the Cowboys fan. Dak Prescott has overachieved in my mind. I thought he was good out of Mississippi State. Don't get me wrong. I thought that he fell further than maybe he should have, but he'd come in and he'd be Romo's backup for a while and then potentially be that stopgap starter. Romo got hurt. Prescott took it, never gave it back. And we've seen what he's been able to do in 4 years in the league. Now at 20, going into being 27 years old, I mean, the dude had almost 5,000 yards last year, which is pretty amazing. But at the same time, you do wonder, okay, and you just brought this up, the coach has changed. So what is that going to do? Is it how much is the offense going to change? Is Dak going to be able to adapt to that change? Are they going to gel? Because that's going to be important. And that's the big reason why Jerry Jones went the direction that he did and firing Jason Garrett, bringing in McCarthy, a veteran coach that's won a Super Bowl, that has that offensive mind. He knew that his chances of winning another Super Bowl revolve around his offense with the weapons that they have on that side of the ball. So there has to be, you know, they have to be on the same page, the quarterback and the head coach. So there are a lot of questions with that you do wonder about. And also, let's just be honest, it's the Dallas Cowboys, and things just have been weird and haven't gone right for them in 20 years. So I can't, and have most of that is on Jerry Jones. So I can't rule any of that stuff out too. While I agree that the running back position is risky no matter what, Derrick Henry still just strikes me as a have to for the Tennessee Titans, just because A, he's become the face of the franchise. The offense revolves around him. You're not forcing Ryan Tannehill to win you games because of Derrick Henry, and you can't bring him down. I haven't seen a team that's just really been that successful as he's gotten into his own and bringing him down. And plus, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, I mean, there's still tread on the tires because he wasn't used that much, wasn't overused, I should say, the first couple of years in the league and even his first couple of years at Alabama. So I think that that's a positive. But that's how I answer the question in a very roundabout way.
Yeah, very roundabout way. When you say Derrick Henry is a have-to for the Titans, isn't Dak Prescott a have-to for the Cowboys?
No, sure.
Because of the position he plays?
Yeah, because of the position. Yes, absolutely. And that wasn't really my argument.
I mean, he's 40-24 with the Cowboys. He's never missed a start. You know, I wouldn't say Dak Prescott is an elite quarterback, but he's pretty darn good. And he has done a lot of good work in the last few years without, you know, pre-Amari Cooper, he didn't really have great weapons around him other than Zeke. So now that you have Amari Cooper and Ezekiel Elliott, and now you drafted CeeDee Lamb, you would think that Dak Prescott would be more successful under center for the Cowboys. And
I would hope so. as the resident Cowboys fan, I mean, I would hope so. But you know, you got me thinking now because you brought up, what if McCarthy doesn't like him? What if they don't gel? I mean, that does change some things. I mean, I think McCarthy got that job. He sat in Jerry Jones' office. I don't know if it was on the yacht or his actual office, but he sat there with him, and Jerry said, "So that's your quarterback. I'm going to need you to make that work." And there had to be a sense of, okay, we like each other enough for me to accept this job. But you don't know until you start working together, and they haven't been able to work together because of everything going on with COVID-19.
Not face-to-face.
Well, yeah, but there's something to be said for that. I mean, I agree. Yeah, you can sit there and stare at each other through a computer screen, but there's something about being in the same room that, you know, you're missing out on some things.
Sure, absolutely. And the Titans and this coaching staff knows exactly what they have in Derrick Henry. And the biggest question mark with Derrick Henry is how much longevity is he going to have at an elite level as a running back? You don't have those same kind of question marks with quarterbacks, especially one like Dak Prescott, who's about to turn 27 years old. And right, he's never missed a start.
Do you think – I just want your opinion on this as a fan and as somebody that covers sports. Do you think that Dak Prescott basically saying, okay, I'll go ahead and sign this, which he's saying he's not going to hold out at that point. He's saying, I'm going to sign this. I am now under contract for this year. Does that help the front office in negotiating, meaning that, all right, that's good. You are now negotiating in good faith. You have signed your tender. That is going to make this a little easier for us to sit down and talk because you're willing to do your part. Now, as Adam Schefter pointed out, it does give him a little bit of an advantage to do that. But do you look at it as that's going to help the negotiating process because everybody kind of feels like, all right, he's playing ball now?
I mean, I would have to think that gives that is advantage Cowboys at that point because Dak is now signed or will be signed once he signs this franchise tender. I would be really interested to hear what Floyd Reese has to say about that this afternoon.
It's a good thing I'm going to ask him that question, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd rather you ask that to a former GM who's been in those shoes before than just
and you, than a Madden GM,
some armchair quarterback or armchair GM sitting in a studio.
It doesn't change your negotiating tactics on Madden.
You know what? It's been a long time since I've done franchise mode on Madden and been in this situation, so I can't remember the last time that I found myself in this situation on Madden.
Fair enough, Ryan.
But fair enough. Maybe with the increase of video game playing, that maybe I'll try to do a franchise mode with the Cowboys and see what happens.
I think that would be a lot of fun. Now, when we come back, speaking of fun, I know I have heard good things on this, full disclosure. I haven't watched it, but you are going to give us a review on a documentary that MLB Network did, and I hope it was good for you. I really do. You're going to tell us about that when we come back here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming live on the Game Nashville app. Darren Donick and Chase, sans Chase, coming up next, as I'll be in for Jared Stillman today on Jared and the GM. So, Ryan,
before you get to the documentary that we're talking about, you need to know that on Friday, when it was me, Marquise, and Elijah from 10 to 2, we called it Darren Donick nor Chase.
Oh, I like that. That's good.
Because all three of y'all were out on Friday. So credit to Elijah. He's the one who thought of that. But all Friday, it was you're listening to Darren Donick nor Chase.
So to tie in with that, so every year on this boys trip that I go on, and Darren McFarland was a part of it as well, we have a cornhole tournament on Saturday. And it usually, I mean, it takes hours, and it's doubles. This year we did singles and doubles, so it's fun to do that. Well, historically, I have not been very good, as you can imagine, because anything athletic I just suck at, and that's life. That's,
yep.
That's where I am.
Yep.
However, as I said with my golf game, I have improved with cornhole because I've been putting in a lot of work. I went through a rigorous off-season program and actually was named comeback player of the year, most improved player of the year, because I was doing all right. I was throwing well. My partner was Darren McFarland. So we had to decide a team name, and I said, How about Darren and Chase, no Donick, you know, because the guys on the trip listened to the show. But the name that ended up winning, which was pretty funny, was So You're Telling Me There's a Chase.
Wow.
That was our team name.
That's bad.
It was good, but I like that, Darren, Donick, nor Chase.
So You're Telling Me There's a Chase.
By the way, there were people tweeting at me, and I had to explain to Marquise who Wally Pipp is, but that I got Wally Pipped. That Marquise did such a great job filling in that, you know, I should have just stayed in Gatlinburg. So congrats to you, Marquise.
Nah, welcome back, man. It's all good. It's all good, man. Welcome back.
Thanks for holding it down. All right. Now, back to the documentary that Ryan watched. And I don't know if he wore pants. I don't want to know. But Ken Griffey Jr., MLB Network, did a documentary. I need to go back and watch this because I have heard good things because you're not the only diehard Reds fan in my life that watched it. So what did you think?
Well, so it's titled Junior, and they released it on Father's Day because of his relationship with his father and the fact that they were actually teammates with the Seattle Mariners back in Junior's younger years. the documentary was very well done, and it's not groundbreaking by any means. You know, with, I wouldn't compare it to necessarily a 30 for 30. You know, the most interesting thing that I think a lot of people learned is what he said to some Yankees fans while signing autographs, which was, if the Yankees were the only team to offer me a contract, I'd rather retire. He was quoted as saying that on video to Yankees fans as he's signing autographs. And then later that fall, the Mariners play the Yankees in the American League Division Series, and the Mariners rally back from down 2-0 to win that game 5 in extra innings in dramatic fashion, with Griffey going from first to home on the double down the line by Edgar Martinez. But it was a great view at a special, special athlete in a time where Major League Baseball needed someone like Ken Griffey Jr. And there was also a lot of what if within that documentary. What if there was no 94 strike? Would Ken Griffey Jr. have broken Roger Maris's home run record? He had 40 home runs through 111 games, which would have put him on a 58 home run pace through a full season. Him and Matt Williams, at the time with the Giants, they were neck and neck in that home run race before the strike. Big what if in Cincinnati with all the games that he missed. If he didn't miss all those games due to injury, would Ken Griffey Jr. Would he be the home run king right now? Because he missed so many games.
Did he play
due to injury?
He played at Riverfront and then GABP, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So when did Great American Ballpark open? Because if he had still had it and been somewhat in his prime in that park, I think there's a good chance.
Well, the first year for Great American Ballpark was 2003, which was the start of his fourth season. Okay. In a Reds uniform, and he spent 9 years in Cincinnati.
Okay. Yeah, because I saw him play. I saw him play there. I saw him hit .599, I think it was, at Great American Ballpark. But you mentioned the injuries and just how they played a role. But did the ball carry out of Riverfront like it does with Great American Ballpark?
No. Well, the ball doesn't necessarily carry at small. Great American Ballpark. It's just the Great American Small Park.
Right. So my question is, were home runs as prevalent at Riverfront?
No.
Or less? Because
less.
Okay.
Less. So, you know, he hit 40 in his first year in a Reds uniform. I have to think, and he didn't touch 40 again, didn't really come close again in a Reds uniform, because it seemed like every season there was something that knocked him out for at least 30 games or even more. And they detailed that, the fact that in Seattle he played his heart out in a Mariners uniform, where he crashed into walls with acrobatic catches. He didn't leave anything on the table on the baseball diamond, and that just took its toll. And once he got to Cincinnati, once he had one or two injuries, they all just started to add up. And you know, even Reds fans were giving him a lot of hell. And booed him off the field off one of the injuries, because Reds fans got so frustrated that, you know, they acquire the hometown boy, and then he doesn't stay healthy, can't stay on the field. And, you know, one other thing that was maybe new to me, I knew he wanted to play in Cincinnati, but I did not know the backstory of how at the end of the 99 season, he went to Seattle management and said, I want to play closer to home. And home for him, for his family, was down in Florida. And the distance between Seattle and Florida, you can't really have a longer flight within the U.S. than from Seattle down to Florida, where his kids were, his wife was, and wanted to be closer to home. His dad, Ken Griffey Sr., was on the Reds coaching staff. So he wanted to get traded to Cincinnati. He did, and then signed the contract with the Reds. And really, after that contract is when all the injuries started taking their toll. But it was a really cool snapshot at one of my favorite athletes of all time. And I know a lot of people our age, Chase, loved Ken Griffey Jr. growing up because of the swing, because of the backwards hat, because of just the flair for
the
for
video
the
game.
Yeah, the video game. Just the flair for the dramatic that he had and just the overall star that he was.
Yeah, I wasn't even, you know, a Mariners fan or a Reds fan, but I liked Ken Griffey Jr. as a player. And during the home run race of 98 that we've talked about a lot lately, you know, I was pulling for Jr. I mean, that was my guy. You know, I didn't like McGuire. I didn't know who Sosa was, really. And I was – so I was pulling for Jr., but very cool. I'm going to have to check that out. So
yeah.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, and, you know, it was also stated within this, especially by Peter Gammons later on when they were kind of reflecting on his career, the fact that he did it clean. And the amount of respect that his peers have for him – of him actually doing what he did clean, I thought was an important thing to weave in there. I'm glad they did it. But, I mean, they had LeBron James in this. They had Reggie Jackson in this. They had Macklemore in this, the artist from Seattle. I mean, it was star-studded with the amount of individuals that were featured within this. Nick Lachey, a big Reds fan and Cincinnati native. So, it was a really, really cool documentary. I enjoyed it actually more than Long Gone Summer because I went into Long Gone Summer with such high expectations and it didn't really meet them. This one, I didn't know exactly what to expect, and I thought the snapshot of his career was really cool to relive.
We have about a minute and a half, and you wanted me to set you up. You're upset about bridges in this town?
All right, so we went house hunting over the weekend, and I've thought this before, but it was really prevalent when Amanda and I went to go visit a house in Hendersonville. Why is there not a bridge over Old Hickory Lake from Hendersonville to Hermitage? Like, that feels like it's so easy. You could hit a golf ball from Hermitage to Hendersonville, but to drive from Hermitage to Hendersonville, it would take you like 45 minutes.
Because there's not a bridge.
Well, there needs to be a bridge. There needs to be more bridges in this city over lakes and rivers.
Well,
that was a big takeaway from the weekend.
I mean, number one, I don't know if it's exactly cheap to build a bridge.
No.
So that's probably why. I mean, you're dealing with water, so there's a lot of things. I have no idea how to build a bridge. I mean, I'm in radio.
I would not trust Chase McCabe to be the engineer behind.
I wouldn't trust me to build
a bridge
either. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know the first thing about building bridges.
But you know what? It would make a lot of people's lives easier.
It would.
A lot of people.
It would make a lot of people's lives easier if there was actually an interstate that went from here to Panama City Beach, Florida. But, you know, there isn't one. So you have to go on the highway through Alabama.
So?
Yeah, but still, you could cut like 3 hours off the trip.
You could say that about anything geographic. If there was just a bridge that went over downtown Nashville and you could get from Dixon to Lebanon and you could basically be driving in the air, then yeah, that would make things a lot easier to get around during rush hour traffic, but that's just not realistic. It is realistic to build a bridge from Hendersonville to Hermitage over Old Hickory Lake.
It's realistic to know that we're out of time, but it's very true, and we will continue this conversation probably never. But that's going to do it for this edition of the Rundown. Stick around. Darren Donick, no Chase today. I'll be on Jared and the GM starting at 2 o'clock. But all of that is next. ESPN 102.5 The Game.